Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page on New FM with myself, Patrick Donoghue. My guest on the show today is Christopher Sands. Christopher is a lifetime Shelburne supporter and attended his first Shelburne game in 1940. In 2015, he released a book entitled Shell's A Grand Old Team to Know, which chronicles the club's history from foundation to present day. And I'm delighted to say Christopher has joined us on the line. Christopher, thanks a million for talking to us this evening. How are you keeping?
I'm very well, thank you very much.
So, Christopher, 1940, you have a long history with the club, going to matches. You must have great memories of going to the games as a young person.
And to sidetrack a little bit, 1940, we stood on the podium, the bookies stands from the Greyhound racing the night before.
Yeah. And you wrote an excellent book, Christopher, about the history.
Thank you very
the,
much.
About the history of the club. Can you tell, this year is a special year for Shelburne's 125 years old. Could you maybe tell the listeners a little bit about how Shelburne came into existence?
Well, as listed, the story we heard, there's a few variations, but the one we heard was that the lads from around Beggars, Bath Avenue, were interested in this new game coming in from England. And they began to organise friendly matches. And the most obvious ones to play against were the soldiers in Beggars Bush Barracks, who were mainly English lads, few Irish lads, etc. And they were always in... It wasn't a regular regiment there. They moved in and out, so they were always getting new faces and so forth. But they were arranging a match with the soldiers, and one of the soldiers says, "What do we call your team?" And they'd never decided to call themselves a team. So they looked around, and there was the road sign that said Shelburne Road. So they said Shelburne. Now, I do admit that there are a few variations that I've included them in the book, but that's the one that we learned as grown up as children. And so the name stuck from then on.
And it's 5 years ago since you wrote that book. Was it a fun process? I'd say, just from reading it, it's a really, really well put together, an awful lot of work. How long did it take you to put all the pieces, bits and pieces together to put the book out?
Now, as you may remember, I acknowledged there Frank Martin.
Yes.
Some people knew Frank Martin had done a lot of work on different clubs, not just he did work with Home Farm and a few others, but he Ollie Bourne had got him involved in sort of putting this stuff together, just making a history, and Frank has to get credit for a lot of that. But as he was taking up other activities, he arranged to meet me from time to time. And he would pass over pieces of information with a view to me writing pieces sort of in the program. So I have to give credit, very much a lot of credit to Frank. He laid the groundwork, if you like. And then I added in what I already knew myself and different members of my family and so forth.
And we always you seem to be a man that's very interested in history, and the history of the club seems important to you. Was a love of history? Were you always very passionate about history?
Oh, always, yeah. Among other things, I was a member of the Old Dublin Society, and I had a number of things published and so forth. Always, yeah.
And going back to it, it's an absolutely incredible that you've been supporting the club so. For so long. What early memories is there? I think you were very young when you went to your first game, would you? But what is there anything particular in the early years going to Shelburne matches that kind of stand out for
my
you?
My earliest memory myself now was a goalkeeper named Norman Tapkin. Now there may be a few olders like myself there who'd remember that name, but not a lot. He was an Englishman. Shelburne had this record of employing English players as well. When they needed players, they would sometimes bring them over from England. But Norman Tapkin was the goalkeeper. And he was kind of a bit flamboyant, as many goalkeepers can be at times. And that was in his first season. And then in his second season, he became player manager. And then after that, then he went back to England and he became a coach with Stoke City. But Norman Tapkin was the one that I would have remembered from the very beginning. And then around that time, there were a number of players with names names are fairly well known even now. Peter Keeley was one of the great heroes of Shelbourne. Now, later on, his son was manager of Shelbourne, although he didn't play for Shelbourne. He played for Shamrock Rovers and other teams. But and then there was Jerry Malone, and of course, some younger people will remember Joey Malone. He was a nephew of his. Jerry was our local hero. And among other things, Jerry's Aunt Mary was my mother's next-door neighbour.
Okay, yeah.
So when we'd be playing football out in the street, whisper would go around. We'd stop. There's Jerry Malone.
Yeah.
Because people don't realise it now, because it's local football has dropped back a bit because of the prominence of the English game, and that's the way it is. But it was really big at that time. Jerry Malone was a hero. He got two caps with Ireland. But he was there's Jerry Malone. And everyone would stop. There he was. And so on. There were many of them like that. They were really, really local heroes.
And were the crowds, I remember hearing that the crowds back in, say, the 60s would have been bigger. Is that what you found compared to
It would. Well, again, you see, although obviously the English game, the game in England was big and so forth, but even so, they weren't getting many on. For instance, most people didn't even have a television if there was a game on television, you know. And so therefore, the local game, you'd have throngs of people going to, well, Shelbourne Park in our case, and then Milltown and Dalymount Park and Talca as it was then with Drumcondra.
Yeah, and is there a particular player, like you've seen a lot of good players, I'm sure, down through the years. Is there a particular player, who would have been your favourite player of the since
well, I always have to mention Rory Dwyer. Rory Dwyer was our centre-forward. He was what might have been described as a tearaway player. He was a very lively player, and he scored a lot of goals. And I'm glad to say, when we got the plaque put up at Bath Avenue, on that day, Rory was there. And I met him since, in fact, because he came to the book launch as well. To my knowledge, he's still alive. He had a younger brother played for the club also, who I know has died since. But Rory was the one. Rory was our hero because he was so, if you like, you could say flamboyant, but it wasn't flamboyant in the modern sense. He was all action. All action.
Do you miss go? We're living in crazy times, Christopher. Like it's crazy to see that games are being played behind closed doors. Are you missing your regular Friday going to Talca Park to go to the
very
matches?
Very much so. Yeah. But you just have, that's the way it is. It's an amazing time. I mean, it is an amazing time. Who would ever have dreamt? If you'd written a novel on these lines, they probably wouldn't have sold it.
Yeah.
You know, that really is amazing, there's no doubt. But that's life. That's life. Just have to get on with it.
And it's been a good season for Shelbourne as well.
Well, so far so good. Yeah. They've kind of escaped from the relegation zone. It was looking a bit dodgy there for a while, but hopefully the improvement will continue.
Yeah, and I might mention the Shelbourne, they've had a good record throughout the years, but the 90s and the 2000s were a particularly good time. And the European run, you write about that in the book, when they played Deportivo La Coruña, that must have been a special. So the Talca Park must have been buzzing for them occasions.
Oh, it was. It was chock-a-block, absolutely chock-a-block. And one of our younger supporters, you may know the name. Sorry, I forget his. He was finishing a course in the university, and he was job hunting, and he did an interview in England on the day of the match. And I think, as far as I did record it, at least in the program, where he had to scramble for trains and boats and planes, and he tried everything.
Yeah.
And eventually got to the ground when all the doors had been locked, everything was locked, and he couldn't get in. And finally managed to draw someone's attention and get in at halftime because he had his ticket and so forth. And that's the way it was. The place was chock-a-block, absolutely chock-a-block. Great to see it.
Yeah. No, like, I remember watching it. I didn't get had the pleasure to watching it, but, like, to get to that stage and that game you mentioned, beat Split of a Croatian team, it was an incredible achievement what they did.
It was.
Yeah. And where's Houlihan, who is still playing? He would have been a player.
That's right.
Yeah. What good memories of watching Wes playing, a really skillful player.
Great to see his style. You know, he's still a very good player. I'm sorry that Shelburne didn't get him back.
Yeah.
But that's the way it is. I'm not sure how it is, what his family circumstances are now. But you may know that his family lived just down the road from Tulka Park.
And
it was great to. And at the time, as he had said to a number of reporters and so forth, a lot of the clubs turned him down because they believed he was too small, that he wasn't developing properly. And it was Shelburne, they took a chance with him. And from the very day he came on, the very first match, as far as I can remember, he scored in the first match, or at least laid on a score in the first match. And from then on, he was terrific to see. Great to see style and composure and so forth.
And it's not, we don't have an awful lot of them really skillful players. I always think he should have played a lot more for Ireland. I think he was just unfortunate that the managers didn't really kind of utilise his talents enough. Would you agree with that?
Well, that's the way it goes. You know that yourself, managers like players of a certain manner or style, and they can be put on the reserve list for all sorts of reasons, and we can. That's one of the great debating points that people say: such a body should have got more, such a body should have got less. Yeah. So forth. That's the way it goes.
And that's the great thing about football. And please God, next year when everything goes back, there's great fun. You meet your friends, and everyone has different opinions. You know, that is the great thing about football. And what I always say about football as well, it's a great conversation starter. You could meet someone from down the country, and it's a great in a conversation when you can chat to someone about football.
Well, until we more or less closed down there, I was one of a few, five or six of us used to sit around together. Most of us steeped, at least in football, if not in Shelburne history. And of course, you get all sort of, other people will call it rubbish, but in very detailed conversation.
And it must be great, like last year I was down in Drogheda myself when Shelburne went up. That must have been 2006 was the kind of financial implosion. Them years in the First Division, they were tough, tough years, weren't they?
They were, but that's the way it goes. It's actually good to see the up and down. I mean, the team, if you like, have to prove themselves, if you like, you know. But that was part of our punishment, of course.
Yeah.
Ollie Bourne gave us the glory years, absolute glory years, and then the money had to be paid back.
And
that was part of the punishment.
Yeah.
We were relegated for that reason.
Yeah, and you're in the book you're talking about, you're telling one story that you're supposed to be on Liveline talking, and you would be pretty supportive of Ollie Bourne. I might be quoting you wrong, but you'd think that he kind of he did, his interests were off the club at all times.
I could tell Ollie himself. There were times I simply did not like him or agree with him.
Mm.
But the club wouldn't be there without him.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that. And as you say, I was asked to wait to go on Liveline, that's what it was. And then they came back to query me to see what way I'd be talking and so forth. And they really wanted someone to slag Ollie Bourne and so on and so on. And I said, no. I can disagree with him, all right, and all sorts of things. But the club simply would not be there without him. And it's one of the great clubs, don't forget, of the Dublin clubs anyway. That what some of the rural clubs, their name, their date of foundation is a bit unusual to me. But however, in Dublin, there's only Bohemians at an older club. Bohemians are 5 years old. Five years older than Shelburne.
And I might ask you about, I have your book in front of me, and very impressed by talking about your education. You went back and went back to college, and you got a master's degree in when you were 65. That's an incredible achievement, Christopher. Was that a tough thing to go back to education then?
No, I always liked school and classes and all of that. And when I was, 10 or 12, my teacher, Jack Duffy, was a famous character in City Quay Boys' School. And I think he had spoken to my father had gone to the Christian Brothers, which as a docker was most unusual. Some dockers had hardly not gone to school, but he decided he would work as a docker. And then he kind of looked at me and said that I wasn't going to lose out. But when it came to the time, I'd been accepted for the Christian Brothers. But I didn't want to leave my friends. Among other things, we used to play football for an hour or so after school, in the schoolyard and so forth. And there were all these things, and I enjoyed that. But when I came to 14 then, my brother sent me for an interview, and I got a job. But I got a job in what was then Jamais, which was the most famous restaurant, very famous, one of the most famous in Europe, in fact. And as a result, I trained for the restaurant business. And after 5 years, I moved over to the Gresham. The Gresham was by then by far the most important hotel in Ireland, and it was booming, you know. And when I was there then, in a very short space of time, I was gradually moved up through the ranks. So, if you like, some people identified that I had a fair amount of talent, if you like. And then, very shortly after that, I was invited to lecture in Colebrew Street. And then, after a year or two of that, my predecessor was retiring. They interviewed for the job, and I was the one selected. Now, at that time, I went into that job as a lecturer at third level, and I hadn't even got a primary cert. So I went, if you like, I went back to recover as much as that. I always liked, even before, I had always gone to evening class whenever the opportunity arose. I always liked that. And as you say then, I went on then, and I went up to DCU and did DMA. And I enjoyed every minute of it. I was by far the oldest in the group, but I didn't feel that. I was happy with that, and it worked out, and very enjoyable to me.
And it says in the book that you were going on, were you thinking of going on to do a PhD, or you might have done it?
Well, I was registered. I was registered for it, and I started. I'd been writing articles in the Shelburne Match Programme, and I was always interested in writing. And I went up, and I was going to enroll for the PhD. And then particularly this book, Frank Martin and a few others had got me involved, and above all, Frank had given me material and which to work.
Mm.
And I decided at that time not to do the PhD. Mm. It would interfere with other things that I wanted to do.
Mm.
And at this stage, I wouldn't say I'd do it, but who knows?
Yeah. Well,
I'd say never say never. It's never too late.
Yeah, and you love, and just from reading the book, you're a big advocate of lifetime learning, because a lot of people...
Oh, very much so, very much so.
Yeah, because a lot of people of your generation and later generation, they didn't have the opportunity, because it's totally different, wasn't it, back then?
Well, I'd had it, you see. Mm. That's what I can't say. I'd had it. I had been accepted for the Christian Brothers School at 10 or 11 years of age, and I managed not to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And as a result, I was lacerated by both my father and my teacher in City Quay Boys National School, Jack Duffesy.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to leave my friend. Now, I know that's a bit cockeyed and all that, but that's the way it was at the time.
Yeah.
And I have no regrets whatsoever. Mm. It worked out for me.
Mm.
Now, as with five great grandchildren, and I've tried to make sure that they didn't do the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But then life is different. As you know yourself, as years go on, education has become so, so important, and qualification, having pieces of paper to show and so forth.
Mm.
But then in my case, it worked out. I worked with very, very good people. And as I say, I was elected and I was promoted.
Mm.
And as I say, I was actually working as a third level lecturer without even having got my primary cert.
Mm. Yeah.
But that's the way it went.
Yeah. And Christopher, you've lived a great life, and we've been talking, you know, it's tough times. Would you kind of have a message for people listening in, you know, based on your life, like the way I'm looking at it, hopefully we look at these times and we'll just, next year we'll have a better year and we'll enjoy the occasions. What would be your perspective?
I always look forward. Things are better and will be better.
Yeah.
As it happens, I have a relative who's over in Spain now working. He's gone through university, etc. He had left school at 13.
Mm.
And I believed he had talent.
Mm.
And I chased him, and I had to accommodate him, had to work out, pay things for him, etc. But he is delighted now because he has his degree and all sorts of other... He's run his own small business over in Spain. Mm. And it's well worth it to see anybody.
Mm.
Now, the same, even when I was in the college myself, every now and then, I remember picking out a few young lads and asking them, would they enroll for further education? Mm. Because you did get people in, believe it or not, you did get them who could barely read or write.
Mm. Mm.
And when I could, I didn't do it myself, but there were various courses around, and if they showed any interest at all, encourage them to go in and do it.
Mm.
That's the way life, but life is very, very different now.
Mm.
Very different.
Mm. And lastly, briefly, Christopher, before you go, I really enjoyed chatting to you. We started talking about shells and we talked about other things. My final question, are you hopeful about shells' future? I've spoke to Ian a couple of times on the phone. He seems to be a good man. So do you think the club is in a good nick at present?
Where would you be without hope?
Yes, and exactly.
If you look through, you've looked through yourself, you have some idea of the history of Shelbourne. Some people refer to various things as teams as yo-yo teams.
Yeah.
Shells were so many ups and downs.
Mm, mm, mm.
So many ups and downs. Even if you go to when we were out in Harvest Cross, as Martin McCormick now, who was a journalist like yourself, he's retired, but he'd say, there might have been 10 people there.
Mm, yeah.
You know? That's the way it was.
Mm.
It's easy to follow the teams that are doing well.
Mm. Mm.
But to keep at it when they're not doing well. And that's what has happened. And that's why I give Ollie Bourne so much credit. Mm. Because the team really was in a bad way.
Mm. Mm.
And he's the one that pulled it together. He's the one that brought us through those European years and so forth.
Mm. Yeah. Listen, Christopher, it's been great talking to you. I could definitely talk to you a lot longer. We might have you on the show some other time. Listen, thanks a million for enjoying us. Hopefully, I might see you in Tolka Park someday, and we'll have a chat. So we'll know then that things are back to normal. But listen, thanks a million for
when the barriers are down.
Yes.
Bye for now. Thank you.
Listen, thanks, Christopher. Thanks a million. Bye. That's great. That was Christopher Sands, a lifetime Shelburne supporter, attended his first Shelburne game in 1940. So it's great to talk to Christopher. Hope you enjoyed the chat.